This morning we wrapped up, sorry, we're wrapping up the book of Judges. So if you would, turn to the very end of that book. In chapter 20, we're going to look at chapter 20 and 21 tonight and wrap up some themes of the book of Judges as a whole. And as I mentioned several weeks ago, the last time that I preached was toward the beginning of the book of Judges, and I mentioned that the whole book is a downward slope, and that things get stranger and stranger, and the people get more and more disobedient, and they're doing things just more and more wrong, and more divided against each other. Remember, these are the people of God, the descendants of Abraham, like we were just reading about, that have conquered the land almost entirely. They didn't quite drive out all of the people they were supposed to. But they've taken the land, they've taken all of their various spots of inheritance, like they were assigned to them. And if we could get the map up here, this is the same map I used last time, where I pointed out a few places to you, and the different tribes are highlighted in different colors. So this is where they ended up, and the places where, or this is the places they were assigned. Of course, last week, you all read about Dan, who decided they weren't quite strong enough to take the land down there and went up up north up here to find a new place for them to live. You can see that city there by the name of Dan that y'all read about last week is where they decided to settle because the people were off, you know, easily caught off guard, and they saw that they were weak, and they decided to settle up there for their own purposes. Rather than following the Lord's instruction to settle down here. But these are the places that the 12 tribes of Israel were assigned, and for the most part where they settled. And so we're going to look at mostly the tribe of Benjamin today. This whole map, from top to bottom, is only about 70 miles from north to south. And I think here in America we get kind of a skewed geography because our country is so large relative to other countries. I'm reminded of a story my dad told me. He works for a company down in Alabama that has branches in other countries, and they have a site in France. And so there were some businessmen that came on a trip to backwoods Alabama from France, and they were going to be there for 2 weeks. And so my dad picked them up at the airport, probably in Atlanta or maybe even Montgomery, and we're taking them to Tallahassee, Alabama, and said, you guys are here for 2 weeks. Is there anything that y'all have planned to do while you're in the States? And, you know, had asked them if it was their first time and things like that. And one of the guys said, yeah, you know, I was really hoping I could see the Grand Canyon and maybe Niagara Falls and maybe listed, you know, a few other places, the Golden Gate Bridge, stuff like this, some of the big name sites, the Statue of Liberty. And my dad said, wait a minute. The size of the United States and the size of France are two totally different things. And you may be able to day trip to all different corners of France, but you can't just day trip to different corners of the United States. And I think we may have kind of the reverse problem of that. Being in such a large country, I'm picturing a little place like Israel, and if we could go to the next picture where we're zoomed in on Benjamin, our whole story in chapter 20 and 21 pretty much takes place right here in Benjamin, and the relative distance here from Bethlehem to Bethel and Shiloh up in this area is only about 10 miles. So the whole area we're looking at is a square about 10 miles across. And to give you a size, in Louisville, about the I-264 loop, the inner loop around Louisville, everything inside of that is kind of what we're looking at tonight. So when we talk about they ran up, they battled for the day, and they went back to Bethel, or Bethel in this map here, it's spelled a little differently than we would normally spell it. The city is not on here that we're mostly going to be talking about. It's right in here called Gibeah, and it's kind of right above the J there. So the area we're talking about is really small. And so it always confuses me in the Bible when they talk about they went somewhere, they battled all day, and then they went way back over to this other city. And I'm thinking, man, that must have been really, really hoofing it to get all the way back over there. But this is a very small area. In fact, this morning, at the end of the book of Colossians, Paul, you remember, said, take this letter over to Laodicea when you're done with it. And when they're finished with their letter from me, make sure you read their letter also. And I happened to be able to go to those places when I was in college. They're in Turkey. And the distance between Laodicea and Colossae is amazingly short. I mean, it's like you're standing on one hill, that's Laodicea, and the next hill over, I mean, you can just see it right across this tiny valley, is Laodicea. And so we get kind of a skewed picture of, I mean, I grew up in Auburn, Alabama. We go down there regularly, and it's a good 7.5-8 hour drive, depending on traffic and how fast you're going and stuff. But we cross huge distances here in America, and over there, the world was much closer together, and the cities were very small. So the story that we're looking at today is kind of what results from some of the things that happened in chapter 19 that Chris covered at the end of his sermon last week, where some great wickedness is happening. So this Levite apparently has a concubine. They stay for the night in Gibeah. This is in the end of Judges 19. The men there surround the house, demand to have relations with the people in the house, and he gives up his concubine, who they ravage until she ultimately dies on the doorstep. And so the Levite, in order to alert the whole country to this problem, divides her up and sends pieces of her all over the land. So she is in 12 pieces, divided up, and sent all over. And so the people all gather together and decide how they're going to respond to Gibeah and Benjamin. And so I want to read to you the theme of this whole section and really the whole book of Judges, which comes up several times in these last 4 or 5 chapters. So the first time it is mentioned is in chapter 17, verse 6, where the Bible says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And then if we look at chapter 18, verse 1 says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Same thing in the first verse of chapter 19. In those days, when there was no king in Israel, a certain Levite, and it continues the story. And then the very last verse of the book sums up the book as a whole, which repeats the words from 17:6. The Bible says, in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And so we're going to see today that obviously Gibeah, as we mentioned from chapter 19, did what was right in their eyes. They did whatever they wanted with this concubine of the Levite and ended up killing her. They did whatever was right in their eyes, and then the rest of Israel responds in whatever way was right in their eyes, and not much following of the Lord going on here. And then they create a problem that they decide to fix in whatever way is good in their own eyes. And so that's the theme of what's going on here, and we're going to see just where that gets them and how it turns out for them. So the judges to this point, we've looked at many men that a problem arose, a man provided by God, or in some cases a woman. We looked at Deborah and Jael that the Lord provided to deliver the people. Rose up a group to fight against the enemy, always an outsider up to this point, but there was never any unity. The people were always divided. And here, at the last, the people are finally united around a problem. And if we could bring up my next picture here. This is a picture from U.S. history. And I'm no specialist in U.S. history, but I think this one's general enough for even me to grasp. And this is a picture that was produced. It's credited to Benjamin Franklin. It was published in a newspaper a little bit before the Revolutionary War. And so there are 13 colonies of America, and there's no unity among them. And so he wrote an article about how America needed to be unified in order to stand against England and the king there. And so this is the picture that he provided with the article. He drew a snake. It's actually in 8 pieces. The head up there, NE for New England, was, I think, 4 colonies, and then he left off a couple for some unknown reason. Georgia's not on there and places like that. But he's got a snake here that's divided into many pieces, and he says, a snake can't live like this. There's no way a snake is going to be effective while he's chopped into many pieces. And so we as America, the 13 colonies, needed to unite in order to face the problem, the king of England. And so that is very analogous to where Israel found itself. There were 12 tribes, no unity among them. We talked about it with Deborah, where there was much thinking and pondering of heart across the river, but they didn't come and help anybody, and nobody was helping each other fight the enemies. And so it was very similar to, I think, America before they unified and rebelled against England. So in a way, Israel, the descendants of Abraham, were in the same condition that concubine was in. She was divided up and sent all over the country, and there was no more unity or effectiveness in the land of Israel than there was in her dead remains. And so that's the condition the people found themselves in. If we could, go back to that zoomed-in map for where we are. And so here the people have finally decided to unite. They gather as one man, one whole body. And this time, the cause, perhaps, is less than a good cause. The other enemies they faced were all foreigners. The other enemies they faced were always outsiders that were oppressing them. Some foreign king. This time they finally unite in order to face an internal problem. So they are at civil war with the tribe of Benjamin. So they gather up, as we read in chapter 20. They've gathered up. 20 verse 1 says, all the people of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba. So that's basically saying from the north to the south. So the phrase is repeated many times in Scripture where it says, they gathered up from Dan to Beersheba, or something happened that everybody knew about from Dan to Beersheba. That means all of the land of Israel, they came out, including the land of Gilead, and the congregation assembled as one man to the Lord at Mizpah. And the chiefs of all the people and the tribes of Israel presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 men on foot that drew the sword. So 400,000 people gather up in order to face Benjamin. So there's a lot of inconsistency here. They're not following the Lord. They're all following idols. They're all not united. Here they've decided to unite in order to eradicate some evil from Benjamin. So they can all do evil except for Benjamin, apparently. Benjamin is going to be held accountable for their evil. So all of the people gather together, picking up in verse 3. Now the people of Benjamin heard that the people of Israel had gone off to Mizpah. And the people of Israel said, tell us, how did this evil happen? And the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, I came to Gibeah. He recounts the story of what happened to his concubine. And then he says in verse 7, behold, you people of Israel, all of you, give your advice and counsel here. And all the people arose as one man, saying, none of us will go up to his tent, none of us will return to his house. Now this is what we shall do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot. So they have decided, we are going to go destroy this city and the people of Benjamin. So there are 400,000 to lay out the troops on both sides of this. There are 400,000 people of Israel that are going to go up and fight Benjamin. And the city, which is right above the J, like I pointed out there. And the forces of Benjamin that gather up, we find a few verses later. In verse 15, the people of Benjamin mustered out of their cities from all over the whole kind of bluish region there. The people of Benjamin gathered out of all their cities on that day 26,000 men who drew the sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who mustered up 700 men. And they mentioned how they could throw stones at a hare, you know, a rabbit, and not even miss. So these are warriors of Benjamin, 26,700 of them, against 400,000 men from Israel. So not very good odds for Benjamin, but these are the battle lines that are drawing up. And remember that this is civil war. So although their intention is to eradicate evil, even the Israelites are very heartbroken that they're having to fight against their own brothers, which obviously is analogous to our Civil War, the American Civil War of the 1800s. And like I mentioned, I'm no expert in U.S. history, but this is general enough that I think I can even grasp it, that even in the U.S., as we were divided and fighting against each other, there was heartbreak across the lines. These were families fighting against families. And I read about one family in particular. I know Joe's a big Civil War buff, but or Bob, I'm sorry, I said the wrong name. Bob is a fan of U.S. history and the Civil War, and I was reading about a family that's from Kentucky, just south of here, down west of, where's that city? The last big city down I-65 before you get into Tennessee. Bowling Green, just west of Bowling Green. They were from Russellville, Kentucky, and their last name was Crittenden, George and Thomas Crittenden, sons of the same man. Both became brigadier generals in the Civil War. Problem was that one was on the Union side and one was on the Confederate side. So two brothers that both rose through the ranks and became generals, brigadier generals, both in the Civil War, and both on different sides of the battle. And so even right here in Kentucky, we can relate to what was going on in Israel, that one family in Kentucky had generals on both sides of the Civil War. And the same thing in Israel. These are all Benjamin, as well as the other 11 tribes, all sons of one man, Jacob, all descendants of Abraham, that God had promised he would he would bless Abraham's family so that they could be a blessing. This is all one family. These are brothers and cousins fighting against each other. So even as they go to battle with each other, you'll see in the story that they are heartbroken over what they're doing. And so Israel gathers up the lines. Verse 17, the men of Israel, apart from Benjamin, mustered 400,000 men and drew up that drew the sword. All these were men of war. And the people of Israel arose and went up to Bethel and inquired of God. So they cast a lot to find out who's going to go first. And the Lord answers that Judah should go first. So the Lord is still present. He's still there. I don't think he was entirely approving of everything that was going on, because they were following idols and not holding to the law. But he still answered them by lots, just as the Bible teaches us that the Lord has control over the result of casting the lot. And so they cast a lot. They decided that Judah should go up first. And then picking up in verse 19, the people of Israel rose in the morning and encamped against Gibeah. And the men of Israel went out to fight against Benjamin. And the men of Israel drew up the battle line against them at Gibeah. And the people of Benjamin came out of Gibeah and destroyed on that day 22,000 men of the Israelites. Huge defeat for Israel against Benjamin. So Benjamin, this tiny little group of 26,700, has killed 22,000 Israelites, and apparently taken small enough losses that they're not even worth mentioning here. And so we don't even know how many people died of Benjamin and Gibeah. But we do know that 22,000 died of Israel. And so the men of Israel, verse 22, says that they took courage and formed a battle line in the same place. And the people of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until evening. And they inquired of the Lord and said, "Shall we again draw near to fight against our brothers, the people of Benjamin?" So you can hear the heartache that they realize these are our brothers that we're trying to kill. And they just whooped our tails today. But should we go try again? Should we really be doing this? And the Lord answers them and he says, yes, you need to go and fight them. So they're on the right track, apparently, to try to eradicate this evil. But the Lord, from my observation, seems like he's not approving of either side of this battle. He, on the one hand, does not like the wickedness in Benjamin, and he wants it punished. On the other hand, when you've got 400,000 folks against 26,700, and 22,000 people of Israel die, it's obvious that the Lord was causing the defeat. And so the Lord is, in a way, punishing both sides of this fight that neither one of them have been over the last several years following him. And so 22,000 die that first day. The second day, picking up in verse 24, the people of Israel came out near the people of Benjamin on the second day. And Benjamin went out against them at Gibeah on the second day and destroyed 18,000 people, men of the people of Israel. And all these were men who drew the sword. Then all the people of Israel, the whole army, went up to Bethel and wept. So they've retreated just north a little bit up to Bethel. And you can remember that that's probably only 3 or 4 or 5 miles away. So at the end of the day, they're up in Bethel and they're weeping. At this point, they have lost 40,000. 40,000 of their warriors have died. And once again, the losses on the side of Benjamin are not even worth mentioning. There were probably some losses, but not in the numbers that Israel had. And so they sat before the Lord and fasted the rest of the day until evening. And they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And the people of Israel inquired of the Lord, for the Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, ministered before the people in those days, saying, so they inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall we go once more and battle against our brothers?" Same kind of wording. These are our brothers. Should we really be doing this? The people of Benjamin, or shall we cease? And the Lord said, "Go up, for tomorrow I will give them into your hand." So on the one hand, the Lord is bringing about great defeat among the people of Israel, showing them that they have not been faithful to him, and all of a sudden they're depending on him when times are bad. And yet at the same time, he knows that the people of Benjamin and Gibeah need to be punished for this crime. So there was much bloodshed going on. The Lord has instructed them, tomorrow I will give them into your hands. So to continue to fight. So the third day of the battle, verse 29 says, so Israel set men in ambush around Gibeah. They've kind of re-strategized a little bit. Okay, 2 days in a row, just facing them head on is not working for us. So they're gonna follow a better battle plan this time. So Israel set men in ambush around Gibeah. So there's people hiding in the bushes on both sides of Gibeah. And the people of Israel went up against the people of Benjamin on the third day and set themselves in array against Gibeah, just as at the other times. And the people of Benjamin went out against the people and were drawn away from the city. And as at the other times, they began to strike and kill some of the people in the highways. The one which goes up from Bethel and the other to Gibeah, and in the open country, about 30 men of Israel. So the battle's starting. They've killed about 30 folks so far. And the people of Benjamin said, they are routed before us, as at the first. So they think they're winning this time, just like the other days. And the people of Israel said, let us flee and draw them away from the city to the highways. And then all the men of Israel rose out of their place and set themselves in array at Baal Tamar. And the men of Israel were in ambush and rushed out from their place at Mareb-Geba, however you say that. And there came against Gibeah 10,000 chosen men of all of Israel. And the battle was hard, but the Benjamites did not know that disaster was close upon them. And the Lord defeated Benjamin before Israel. And the people of Israel destroyed 25,100 men of Benjamin that day. All these were men who drew the sword. And so the people of Benjamin saw that they were defeated. And another angle of the same event in the next few verses here. It says the men of Israel gave ground, just like we just described. The men of Israel had acted like they were being defeated and started running in order to draw out all the men from the city to far away so that the people that were encamped around the city could rush in there and destroy the city while it was unguarded. Verse 37, the men in ambush hurried and rushed against Gibeah, and the men in ambush moved out and struck all the city with the edge of the sword. Now the signal that had been appointed between the men of Israel and the men of the main ambush was that when they had made a great cloud of smoke rise up from the city, the men of Israel should turn in battle. And Benjamin begun to strike and kill about 30 men of Israel. And they said, surely they are defeated before us, as in the first battle. But when the signal began to rise out of the city, the Benjamites looked behind them, and behold, the whole city went up in smoke to heaven. Then the men of Israel turned, and the men of Benjamin were dismayed, and they saw the disaster close upon them. Therefore they turned their backs before the men of Israel in the direction of the wilderness, and the battle overtook them, and those who came out of the cities were destroying them in their midst. Surrounding the Benjamites, they pursued them and trod them down from Nohah as far as the opposite of Gibeah on the east. 18,000 men of Benjamin fell, all of them men of valor. And they turned and fled toward the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon. 5,000 of them were cut down on the highways, and they were pursued hard at Gibeon. 2,000 of them were struck down. And so all who fell on that day from Benjamin were 25,000 men who drew the sword, all of them men of valor. But, verse 47, 600 men turned and fled toward the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon that remained at the rock of Rimmon for 4 months. And the men of Israel turned back against the people of Benjamin and struck them with the edge of the sword. The city, the men, the beast, and all that they found, and all of the towns they found, they set on fire. So this time, the people here at the top of the J, their city is destroyed. They turn back and they see, wow, our whole city is in flames, and they turn to scatter. And at the same time, because of the signal, the Israelites who were fake fleeing before them turned back on them and began to strike them down. And so they started scattering all over the place, and it recounts, you know, so many thousand of them died here, so many thousand of them died here. 600 of them escaped to Rimmon, which is right up here next to Ai. They stayed there, it says, for 4 months. So 600 men is all that's left. The whole rest of Benjamin, this whole bluish area, the whole rest of the place, Israel went all throughout, destroying all the cities, killing all the beasts, killing all that they found there, which would mean the women and children. So they are eradicating the people of Benjamin, and there are only 600 left, 600 men. Well, now that they have dealt with the problem in the way that seemed best in their own eyes, they have a new problem. And that problem is, wait a minute, these are our brothers. We're the 12 tribes of Israel. Right now we are the 11 tribes plus the 600 of Benjamin. What's the problem with Benjamin? It's just men. There's only 600 of them. And so, at the end of this generation, it's going to be the end of Benjamin, unless we find a new way to fix our new problem. And so they decide to fix it. I'll put fix it in quotes. They decide to fix it in the way that seemed best in their own eyes. And so they get to talking together, and they say, well, we took a vow. All of us took a vow not to provide any of our daughters to be wives to the Benjamites. So we're going to treat the Benjamites just like the Canaanites and everybody else, that we are not going to allow our daughters to marry any of their sons. And so now they've got a problem. They've just killed all the women. They've just killed all the children. And there are only 600 men of Benjamin left. And they realize at the end of this generation, we're going to be the 11 tribes of Israel. We've got a real problem here. And so they decide to try to finagle up some solutions to this. So they're going to try to duct tape a solution together. And the first part of the solution that they come up with is to find some wives, part one. So, reading in chapter 21, the men of Israel had sworn at Mizpah, no one of us shall give his daughter in marriage to Benjamin. The people came to Bethel and sat there in the evening before God, and they lifted up their voices and wept bitterly, and they said, O Lord, the God of Israel, why has this happened in Israel, that today there should be one tribe lacking in Israel? So they've cried out to the Lord. That's a good start. The problem is they never wait around for an answer, and they decide to come up with their own solution. And the next day, they rose early, built an offering, offered burnt offerings and peace offerings, and then they start talking to each other. And they say, did anybody not come up and make this vow to not give their daughters to Benjamin? And they realize that there's a city called, Jabesh-Gilead, that did not come up. And they say, well, they didn't vow not to give their daughters. Maybe they'll give their daughters, except for they don't even stop there. They just say, let's go kill them. Because, you know what? They should have come up. They should have come and joined us. And since they didn't, let's go kill them. And that'll free up some daughters, because they're not going to need them. So they run over to Jabesh-Gilead, which is right on the other side of the river over here. And like I said, probably 10 or 15 miles away. And let's just read the text there. Which of all the tribes in verse 5 of Israel did not come up in the assembly to the Lord? For they had taken a great oath concerning him who did not come up to the Lord at Mizpah, saying, he shall surely be put to death. It's convenient. And the people of Israel had compassion for Benjamin their brother and said, one tribe is cut off from Israel today. What shall we do for wives for those who are left? Since we have sworn by the Lord that we will not give any of our daughters for wives. And they said, what one is there of the tribes of Israel that did not come up to the Lord at Mizpah? And behold, no one had come up from the camp of Jabesh-Gilead to the assembly. For when the people mustered, behold, not one of the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead was there. So the congregation sent 12,000 of their bravest men and commanded them, go and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead with the edge of the sword, and also the women and the little ones. So they're going to kill everybody there. And this is what you shall do. Every male and every woman that has lain with a male, you shall devote to destruction. And they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead 400 young virgins who had not known a man by lying with him. And they brought them to the camp at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. So they have secured, through their own reasoning and their own attempts at finding a solution for this, 400 young ladies for these 600 men. They still have a problem because there's not quite enough. So they've got 600 men from Benjamin left, and they've got 400 wives for them, which they have just stolen from Jabesh-Gilead. And the whole congregation sent word to the people of Benjamin who were at the Rock of Rimmah and proclaimed peace to them. And Benjamin returned at that time. And they gave them the women whom they had saved alive from the women of Jabesh-Gilead. But there were not enough for them. And the people had compassion on Benjamin because the Lord had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. And the elders of the congregation said, here they are again. They're going to try to find 200 more to provide wives for the rest of these men. And once again, they're not inquiring of the Lord how they ought to do this. They're trying to come up with a solution on their own. They cried out to the Lord at the first, but they didn't wait for him. They proceeded with their own reasoning, once again, doing what's right in their own eyes. So they've killed a bunch of people from Jabesh Gilead, which, you know, were also their brothers. Except for maybe they didn't like them or something because they weren't too heartbroken about it. And then their next plan is even more ridiculous. So they are at Shiloh, and this map spells it Shiloh, but it's Shiloh. And they're up there. They're trying to come up with a new plan, and they realize, wait a minute. Here soon is a festival where all the daughters will be coming out to dance before the Lord and celebrate in the name of the Lord. And so, since we've vowed, cursed be anyone that gives a wife to Benjamin, they say in verse 19, behold, sounds like a light bulb just went off, behold, there is a yearly feast of the Lord at Shiloh, which is north of Bethel, on the east of the highway that goes up from Bethel to Shechem, and south of Lebanon. And they commanded the people of Benjamin, saying, go and lie in ambush in the vineyards and watch. And if the daughters of Shiloh come out to dance in the dances, then come out of the vineyards and snatch each man a wife from the daughters of Shiloh and go to the land of Benjamin. So go back home. And when their fathers or their brothers come to complain to us, we will say to them, grant them graciously to us, because we did not take for each man them his wife in battle, neither did you give them to them, else you would now be guilty. And so the Benjamin did so. And so the men of Benjamin did so. So here's the plan. The people of Benjamin should go up to Shiloh, hide out among the vineyards. So you can kind of realize the time of year. There's leaves on the vines, and there's probably grapes growing on them and things. And the people are hiding out in the vineyards. And the whole plan, and you would think people from Shiloh are here. They're in on this plan, which makes it totally ridiculous. But the plan is the people from Benjamin are going to go steal these ladies, run off with them, drag them home, and they'll have some wives. So the remaining 200 guys are going to have wives as a result of this plan. And then verse 22, I mean, this is twisting and finagling the reasoning and all of the morality that you've ever heard of. This is coming up with a duct tape together plan. This is the bottom of the barrel. So obviously, when 200 ladies from Shiloh go missing that were their daughters, their fathers and their brothers are going to come complain. And they coached each other on what their response was going to be so they could be consistent. They said, whenever the brothers and the daughters come out to complain to us, we're going to say, don't get so upset about it. Grant them graciously to us. Guess what? We didn't come kill all of you like we did Jabesh Gilead. We didn't take them in battle. So you don't have any reason to be mad at us. And guess what? You didn't give them to Benjamin. They were stolen. So you aren't guilty of breaking your vow that you wanted to not give any daughters to Benjamin. So I'm good. You're good. Let's all just be happy and act like this didn't ever happen. And so this is their grand plan. They have really twisted the reasoning. They have totally abandoned any kind of holy people of the Lord mentality of how they should treat this problem. And they are going to say, look, we didn't kill all of you to take them, and technically you didn't give them away, so technically you didn't really break your vow, and so I'm good, you're good, let's just all be happy and go on home. And so this is the bottom of the story. This is the bottom of the barrel, where we've reached the bottom of the slope of the book of Judges, that we have reached a point of rationalizing evil, and we're just going to act like it's all okay. And remember, they haven't ever asked the Lord about any of this. We're doing things that are right in our own eyes. And so the people of Israel have chosen to go about this plan, and so the people of Benjamin did so, took their wives according to their number from the dancers whom they carried off, and then they went and returned to their inheritance and rebuilt the towns and lived in them. So the 600 men now have 600 wives, and they're going to go back and rebuild the bluish-gray area of Benjamin and rebuild all the cities there. And I think it's easy to really say, man, you guys are ridiculous. All of it, this is the whole of Israel. And nobody said, wait a minute, I don't think this is a good idea, guys. I don't think this is in line with the law that we've received from Moses. I don't think this stands up to the Lord who we have just been asking to help us in battle and stuff like this. But you can, I think, relate to this, and I'm sure you've done it in your lives, and I've done it in my life, where when you want to do evil, it's so easy to be tempted to rationalize it and to say, well, technically, I'm not really doing this wrong, and so I can kind of finagle this a little bit, and I can kind of do this and feel better about myself by reasoning it out. I mean, we get so intelligent when we want to do evil. All of a sudden, you take some guy that's never been to school, never was educated, and can't solve simple arithmetic, and you put a situation in front of him where there's something he wants, and he knows it's wrong, but he wants to do it, and all of a sudden, he's as intelligent as some guy that graduated from law school and knows all of the history of the courts and is able to come up with a solution to his problem of, I want this, and it's wrong. How am I going to solve it? Well, if I can somehow in my mind cut a couple of corners and skip a few steps and come up with a way that it doesn't quite seem wrong, then maybe I can go ahead and have my cake and eat it too. And so we do the same thing, and this is what the people of Israel have found themselves doing, that they're twisting the law, they're cutting corners, and trying to act like it's all okay. And so the book of Judges is summed up in the last verse, which says, in those days there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And we've seen that in this story, as well as the rest of the book of Judges up to this point. And things are just getting worse and worse and worse. And at the end of this story, they're really no more united than they were at the beginning of the story. They came together, punished Benjamin, they came together to reason themselves out of doing more evil and less evil, and they came up with a little solution here. So they were united in their wickedness and in their war against Benjamin, but really they're still in the same situation. Chapter 17, verse 6, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes, not what was right in the Lord's eyes. Last verse of the book, in those days there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And yet, throughout all of this, the Lord has not abandoned his people. These are the people of Abraham that the Lord said, I will bless you, and through your descendant, you will be a blessing to the whole world. And so I want you to turn the page from the book of Judges, or maybe if you're Bible, it ends on the left page. Maybe it's just right there on the right page. We find the book of Ruth. And to connect this to the context of the history here in Israel, the book of Ruth, we're going to look at the very first verse and then the last couple verses. In the days when the judges ruled, or some translations say, in the days of the judging of the judges. So at this time, when everything is going horribly wrong, and Israel is self-destructing, it's imploding on itself, in the days of the judging of the judges, the book of Ruth happens. And we read in this story about Naomi getting this foreign wife for her son. Her sons are all dead, her husband's dead. Ruth comes home with Naomi. Is essentially adopted into her family. And Boaz, as the story goes, ends up redeeming her to be his wife, chooses to marry her. And we come to verse 18 of chapter 4. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram, and Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz, the guy that redeemed Ruth. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David. So even through this wicked time in the history of Israel, during the judging of the judges, at the time when the judges ruled, the story of Ruth happens, in which the Lord is continuing his plan. He's continuing to work through Abram's family and narrowing it down to Jesse, who fathered David, who we read in the coming chapters, becomes the king of Israel, and his descendant ultimately is Christ, who was the blessing that was awaited. And but first, we have to spend a little time with Saul in the book of 1 Samuel, who, guess what? Guess where he was from? Saul was from Gibeah. Gibeah right there at the top of the J, where all this went down. And so the first king of Israel was Saul from the tribe of Benjamin. His hometown we see in 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 26. It says that after he was anointed king, Saul went to his home at Gibeah, and with him went the men of valor whose hearts God had touched. So Saul, the king from the tribe of Benjamin, has returned home to Gibeah, and so we see that he's pretty messed up from the start. He's from the wrong tribe. He's from the city that just did all this wickedness a couple of years before, and so he's starting off on the wrong foot and ultimately falls so that the Lord can stand up David, who is from the tribe of Judah, which back in Genesis we read that the rulers would come from the tribe of Judah. So the Lord finally set up the man that was after his own heart from the right tribe in order to establish the lineage of the Messiah, Jesus Christ. And that's where we wrap up the book of Judges and look forward to what's coming next in the history of Israel. I'll let you wrap us up.
So as you can see, we have a lot in common with the